On RSN 927's Racing Pulse, welcome to The Verdict.
If New South Wales want to play these little silly games, and I like the fact that Victoria's risen above it, to say no, that the integrity of the carnival is bigger than a spat.
Jockey's good enough. It doesn't matter where he or she is from, what state they're based in, they're going to get good rides. If they're elite, they will get elite rides.
The bottom line that I took out of Saturday was that the best of Arcadia Queen at the moment is better than the best of Russian Camelot.
Yeah.
But for racing, Ole Kirk's had, what, six starts, seven starts? We don't want to see him retired.
I think we're at the point now where we have to stop referring to our best female jockeys as lady riders. Surely we just recognise everybody as they're all competitors
what they still
on the field.
Yeah. I know you can't judge it on one set of circumstances on 24 hours around the world, but it did give an idea that maybe Very Elegant is a globally good horse.
The point has been made that this is still a work in progress. He's very talented, but he's not the perfect racehorse yet, and he's not invincible.
The world of the triple place parlay has there's a few bumps in the road have appeared.
it is time for the Monday Verdict with Matty Stewart and also the Shark after a huge 100th Cox Plate. The two-day carnival, the Friday and the Saturday, were two different days, two different tracks, but we had some magical results regardless. Matty Stewart and the Shark, how was your weekend, gents?
Character building.
Oh, probably the place.
But Significant for me because it's a new direction.
New direction?
Control. Oh. Patience.
Oh. Okay.
Can we frame a market? How long this lasts?
Restraint.
It was a weird weekend, wasn't it? I mean, I backed a few winners, but I lost on the day, which sucked. But, yeah, what can you do about that?
But it was kind of... There were some forgettable elements to the Cox Plate weekend and elements that will never be forgotten, like the Cox Plate run in front of no crowd, the 100th. No one is ever going to forget those set of circumstances with the pandemic.
Can we forget Braithwaite? Can we move on from him? Surely he's done his dash.
Well, I didn't see his performance. You're not happy?
Oh, it's just naff. It's just naff.
What do you want to have?
Why is he... I don't know why he is tied to this race because he sung a song once and it went off all right. It's not even his song.
Now I know
he's from another era.
I'm a bit opposite. I like quaint traditions. I like quaint traditions.
Total unless it,
would you rather the
you're a Triple J man, so you want to hear from someone that no one knows.
Did you prefer the?
No, I don't think we need to hear from anybody.
Did you prefer the music at the start of the AFL Grand Final instead? That more modern stuff that no one understood.
Look, I like DMAs, but Cub Sport was a very strange choice.
What about the cover of a Cher song by someone else? What was that all about?
Well, so hang on a second. If we're not having covers,
give
then
me the Dazzler any day.
Daryl is out.
But don't you like little things that people can attach to that are a little bit geeky? I
don't have an issue. I didn't see it, but really I think on a day when no one is there, they're trying to add a bit of colour to Cox Plate when there's no crowd there.
Flick the channel.
One thing which, and I just spoke to Luke Curry about it then, is that it would have been tough for those jockeys because it did look freezing cold out there to be standing out on the track before the Cox Plate in front of an empty stand.
Choreography was a little bit askew, wasn't it? But what I meant when, so they're all the memorable bits because it was so unique, but you know, couple of so-so internationals come out and knock us for six yet again in a Cox Plate. I think it's pretty insightful about pound for pound the sort of horses we
pile up. So they're average, these internationals now, are they?
They are part of the pack in Europe. They're not signature horses
100%.
In Europe at all.
100%.
They're also Rans Michael. They run at 66-1 against Gayarth and Magical. They run second in races that Gayarth and Magical aren't even in. So how high do you want to rate them? If you wanted to put an Australian context on it, they're Natoya and Humidor. That's the class of horse they are. Off the top, but competitive.
So a couple of months ago, we were talking about that Russian Camelot's a horse that could maybe go onto the world stage. Now, he's only three. You would imagine he's got more improvement to come. I thought he was courageous.
Armoury's
on Saturday.
Only three.
Yeah.
So put a Noble, Gayarth, Magical and the Ark winner in that race and they probably put seven lengths on Armoury and Sir Dragon A, who put three lengths on our best. That's the context.
Yep.
So there was no Lis Grishow this year.
If
as
a
well.
Japanese horse came, it would have been...
The wet track would have...
Gee, I don't know about that. It's but, they were just a, they're just a group.
But I know, so we can't do anything about it, but it is what it is. We can't change our selling history and our breeding culture and speed and all that sort of stuff, but it's so glaring at this time of year. We, you get a once-in-a-hundred-year freak like Winx, who we suddenly think, oh, we can produce these horses, but she's a once-in-a-hundred-year fluke. They produce a horse like her every year, you know.
And the problem we've got in Australia, we need to start seriously thinking about where we're going to get these middle-distance horses from and staying horses from, because Europe is not... Europe is moving towards speed too. Mm. The recent... Oh, it's happening in the next couple of days. The Tattersall's horses in training, so it was about 1,300 tried horses, basically, going around that. I've gone through that catalogue, and it's basically sprinter milers. It is full of sprinter milers. They are trying to breed faster horses, and they're classic stallions that were once would have gone to stud at Coolmore and been flat stallions. They are now national hunt stallions. That's where they're getting shoved to. They're taking our fast stallions like Zoustar and things like this, taking them up to Europe, breeding to them. They want speed. It's not going to be very long before that market for staying horses, middle distance horses in Europe, shrinks even further. So what are we going to be doing? Buying their, you know, C, D, E graders?
Five of the top six were Europeans.
John Ferguson said that to you a year or so ago about the push towards speed in Europe. But let's just treat it for what it is now. And I tried to get this point across in a story. Look, if you think of it in this way, think of a Japan Cup where none of the competitors were bred in Japan. They were all imported from Australia by Schnitzel and I'm Invincible. That's the situation in reverse. Yeah. And the Europe, and imagine if, like, the Armoury and Sir Dragon A equivalents, say they're fringe dwellers in Europe, our fringe dwellers in these sort of races are horses like Natoya and Humidor. Imagine Natoya and Humidor going to an Ark or a King George and running the Cornella. You couldn't. It's unimaginable because it's impossible. So that's the chasm between year-to-year quality that they produce and the year-to-year quality that we produce.
I don't think this is anything new. It hasn't sprung up out of
No, it's been a gradual erosion, right? But what's the freight train that's about to hit us is the realisation that unless you're a Lloyd Williams, Aussie Care, Bray Sokolsky, these sort of people with serious wealth behind them, I don't have €1 million to get a group of guys together and go and buy a horse in Europe to be competitive in these races. So if it's a game available only to the very rich, then anybody with the dream of winning a Cox Plate, the fairy tale's not even in the conversation. It's so far out of reach.
There's one horse in the top 50 in the ballot for the Melbourne Cup who was created in Australia. One. In 50. I mean, that's just... If we were Japanese doing this show, or English or Irish, four or five.
Right.
But if we were hosting this show in Japan, and we were talking about the Japan Cup, and we were saying there is not one Japanese horse in the Japan
Sumo
Cup...
Matt.
But don't you think... I know you're saying that this is not a first time this story has arisen, and all that sort of stuff, but when you look at it in the clarity of what happened in the Cox Plate, and looking at the Melbourne Cup, is it not just an indictment on the way our industry has progressed?
To be worried about, because we stopped breeding stayers, right? It's the common phrase. But we all sat there and watched. And, oh, well, we're not breeding stayers anymore. Let's buy them from New Zealand. Oh, but they haven't upgraded their mares in a long time. They don't have the stallions anymore. A lot of their horses get sold in Hong Kong. Okay, we can't buy them from New Zealand. All right. Instead of saying, well, let's spend money on some mares, or let's get together and a group of breeders and buy a couple of proper stallions to stand here and really give them a chance, we just look for the next band-aid solution, which was going to Europe and buying horses. Now, that tap has nearly been turned off. So what's the next solution?
It's like having a Thanksgiving Day parade in an American city, but all the people in the parade are from Russia or Eastern Europe. It's just so...
Wow, this is a negative start to the post-Cox
Plate. It's not, Michael.
You work in the breeding industry now, Sharky.
Yep.
So, well, why won't it change?
Why won't it
change? Commercial reality.
Because the bulk of our value in horses is in sprint mile horses. That's where it is. But the bulk of our prize money is in staying races. Like, apart from, don't at me, like the Everest and things like that. But the bulk of our prize money is in spring cups and Cox Plates. But no one wants to breed a horse. What do they want to do? They'll just all go and buy a ticket in the raffle. What happens if we can't buy any more tickets in the raffle, guys? Oh, I don't know. Like, what's the next solution? We're not fixing the problem.
And last year...
We're just band-aiding it.
And last year, like, it's the grind and the graft of our participants who work night and day with all the stuff that's putting them under so much pressure. They create the turnover that creates the prize money. The vastly superior European horses, they took $18 million out of our racing economy in the space of about 9 months last year. $18 million of money that was toiled to be created by our participants. So I'm not saying there's a solution, but it is a terrible reality. It's a very stark reality.
Well, if we stop buying horses, Ballydore's still going to send horses here. Well, and they know the right horses to send now. Like, Armory was the right horse for the Cox Plate. Soft ground probably didn't help him, help the winner. Regardless, both of those horses were once Ballydoyle horses, Sir Dragonet and Armory. They've set out a very good team for the Melbourne Cup. But if Wichita didn't go amiss, it was the bet of the week for Cup Week in the Cantala. A place getter in a 2,000 guineas this season, lobbing in a Cantala.
And what about when Aidan Twiggs and he starts sending horses down for our derbies and oaks, which he can do with Northern Hemisphere breeds, and starts peppering those races. So, but the other thing too is we have had access to these bloodlines. It's not like we haven't had our chance. We've had Galileo,
Montjoie. Didn't support them when they were here.
No, we've had every chance with the same pool of horses as they've had, regardless, broodmares aside, but it's not like we haven't been given the opportunity.
Suman Hedge put out a really good tweet following the Cox Plate, requesting, tagging Dali and Coolmore in, saying, oh, if you wouldn't mind sending these two lads back down, we really miss them. One being Knight of Thunder and one being Camelot. And they were here, but local breeders didn't support them. So
imagine how much they giggle sitting back saying, we'll send our second and third tier horses down and we'll clean up and come home, and then we'll leave eight who have gone amiss at Werribee for us to deal with the animal welfare issue as well. That's the other issue at the moment.
And the irony of the situation is when Camelot was here, support was mediocre. And now... Everyone, you know, on the back of Russia Camelot and no doubt Sir Dragonet, Australians are just going to yearling sales in Europe and buying Camelot. So it's such a knee-jerk way to look at it, and they're paying five times what they would have had to pay if they were buying them locally or breeding to them locally. It's so knee-jerk.
SMS is coming through here.
Daryl Braithwaite, one from him probably.
No, there's a few saying that you're right about Braithwaite. Braithwaite should get on his horse and ride off. Daryl Braithwaite sounded like a squirrel. Eating nuts. But there's a lot here saying, come on, boys, you're being too negative. Move on. Bit of negativity coming across in today's show, lads. That's from Craig.
Why does the show have to be... Well said. Why can't we talk about these issues on a show called The Verdict?
Another one here saying... I'm just reading the feedback,
mate.
Another one here saying, didn't Sharky say that Sir Dragonet was a squib and couldn't win the Cox Plate?
No, I didn't say that. What I said was the horse has a reputation throughout Europe for not trying and for thinking about things. What I did say was he's got the ability to win the race, but it's all between the ears. If he turned up, and I think the Bossy's ride was probably the difference. He brought the horse through the field. And if you've got a horse that likes running with his mates and doesn't really like leading and being that winner at the end of the race when they're asked for their full effort, coming through a field is a great way to counter that. And I thought Glenn Boss did that. He rode that horse to an absolute T. He sort of half-kitted to him. The gap came. Horse burst through. Hit the front. Happy days. You watch him in Europe, it's a different animal.
So you don't take back the tag of non-winner?
No, he's a non-winner. I'm not the only one that had that opinion. And when you're coming off your last victory in a Chester Vase in 2019, you've had eight runs since, from listed level to Group 1 level, and you haven't been able to win... There's a body of work there to explain why you have that reputation.
How would Coolmore have felt watching Sir Dragonet beat Armory? They did provide the trifecta as far as the size are concerned, but I did hear that Tom Magny was pretty much the first person on the phone to contact Aussie Keir and congratulate him after the win.
He would have been, yeah, because they're a class outfit. But they sell horses that they think have reached their mark. Sir Dragonet is no different to any of the horses they've sold down here before. Because the horse won, there's probably a positive there because Aussie and Co. will go back and buy from Coolmore again. Now, they might not get another Sir Dragonet, but they're going to do business there again, won't they? So Sir Dragonet had reached a level in Europe.
Is there a positive spin?
He had no more to give there.
Is there a positive spin on what It's kind of negative but positive. On what Moonee Valley should do about the two-day doubleheader?
Get rid of Friday night.
You don't want to have Fridays anymore.
It doesn't add anything. And the undercard across both meetings is really diluted. I just love it. An all-stakes race, 10-race card on the Saturday. Having two, like the 955s, for example, two very similar 955 fields, one carved up by scratchings. Okay, the weather played an impact there. But that you've got the same race, effectively the same race, one day and then the next day. It doesn't add to me.
I was talking to a trainer yesterday. I reckon this is a good way of looking at it. He said, all the racing we put on during the year, night and day, generates the income. The spring will generate income as well. But he said, surely the carnival is to showcase our very best. The rest of the year is to generate most of the money. VRC is different, but surely this time of year when everyone's looking is when we showcase the very best we can put on, like every other sport does. So we have 19 races or 18 races over 2 days. 10 of them are barely worthy of a Saturday program out of season, let alone in a carnival. You get a track that's churned up. You've got a Cox Plate that's raced 17 of 18. You know, and you don't have a Manicato on Cox Plate though. Like, I remember when, you know, when Apache Cat won and So You Think won later in the day, when Manicato won and Kingston Town won, that was a proper spring Saturday to put on your finest and go to Moonee Valley. Like, but now, they're not giving you much of a reason to... Like, those first... How did you feel for the first 5 races on Saturday?
They were thin races. And, look, the weather played a part. But I think the programming as a whole, they're going to review it because, you know, the Wednesday meeting at Caulfield doesn't work anymore. Yep. And ironically, you've been talking and others have been talking about let's dilute the strength of Caulfield Guineas Day and move a Group 1 to that Wednesday to keep that Wednesday.
I haven't argued that.
And then now we're talking about... I think most of it is from... In a normal year, it's a club revenue point of view as well to have the Friday night meeting and the Saturday because usually there's a lot of corporate, there's a lot of hospitality, and there's an extra day of turnover. So for the club and the industry, it gets more money if you have the two meetings rather than the one meeting.
Well, that's right. That. And in Moonee Valley's defence, if I was the accountant at Moonee Valley, I'd have the opposite view of what I have now, obviously. But... maybe the clubs have got too much autonomy over their own decision-making and it upsets the apple cart for what's for the greater good.
What about the age-old argument? If they did, which they had the opportunity of doing something a bit more radical, you could have a Cox Plate before a Caulfield Cup and then you'd have the Friday night meeting, which could move to the Saturday, so you've still got your two Saturday meetings, which would still work in the progression of things and have... more than 12 hours between the two meetings.
But does it have to be seamless like that, or can it be challenging? Can there be a challenge of coming back from the Caulfield Cup to the Cox Plate if you really think you can do it? Like, the Belmonts, the Triple Crown in America is hard to win because it's a really difficult staggered distance and timing and all that sort of stuff. So maybe you don't have to make it spread seamlessly. Maybe you can make it a bit haphazard and challenging, and may the... best horse win in that scenario.
There's quite a few SMSs that are agreeing. Morning boys, well said. Time to scrap the Moonee Valley doubleheader, make the Saturday a super Saturday. The undercard was very ordinary. That's from Tiggs. Other SMSs. Finally, Stuart starts talking some sense. Scrap the Friday night. That's from Dave. Look, I think...
I hope it's not my father, Dave.
I think it's a tough one for the club because I think... as we are racing fans, we agree that it was pretty ho-hum, the undercards, on Friday night and on Saturday.
Yep.
But from a financial point of view, the club would be really wanting to continue to have their doubleheader. And the other thing that we talk about each and every year is the stress that it puts on the track and Marty Sine and the track manager, especially when you've got a weekend like we did this weekend, a good 3 lightning fast that are breaking track records left, right and centre on the Friday night, and then we get the downpour and the deteriorating track on the Saturday.
You know what I reckon the compromise will probably be? When they build the new track and it's all, you know, flash, they'll probably have a night Cox Plate and that'll eradicate the need for the Friday night. They probably will do the hybrid version of everything we're saying and run a night Cox Plate and have everything on that program. So that's probably what they'll end up doing.
Not a bad idea. I thought, look, weather aside, Marty Sine, he prepared that track to the absolute best of he and his team's ability. I know it was quick ground on Friday night, but the track was in great shape. It really was. He he couldn't have done anything else given the forecast and the probability from the experts in that field as to what was going to hit Moonee Valley. And the rain eventually did hit.
Did you just say probability then, just to stir me up?
I might have. It probably came a little bit later than they expected and then rolled into, you know, a bit deeper into Saturday morning. But there is nothing he could have done about it. Nothing.
No,
exactly. I haven't heard anyone bag Marnie Saunders, and they shouldn't, because he did a stunning job over the weekend. Hello, boys. The Manicato has been cooked by the Everest. And there's no chance of a landing moving
true.
The Everest.
Absolutely true. Only one Everest runner ran in the Manicato.
SMS is coming through here. This one's directed at you, Sharky, and it's a little bit of a proverb, I think, here. Shark 3 days older, but not so much wiser. You must own your mistakes, Grasshopper.
What have you done, Grasshopper?
Well, he's just declared that Sir Dragon A couldn't win a Cox Plate.
What are you thinking, Grasshopper?
Well, you know, I don't understand where not owning the mistake comes into it. Anyway, that's what I said, but I also said in that moment he has the ability to win, so I don't know.
It was great to see Wincy's reaction, Michael, wasn't it, with his role he's played with Sir Dragon A, and I've never seen Wincy animated.
Let's have a listen
ever.
To it, because James Winks, who was congratulated by both Glenn Boss and also Kira Mara as the secret weapon, was on air with us on the spring ticket. You don't get to see, well, I haven't seen him touched like this before. This is what his reaction was straight after the race.
Oh, I've got mixed emotions, to be honest. Obviously, my career ended 3 months ago, and then I've got into a role, and it's very satisfying, to be honest, and a little bit emotional. I don't know why, I'm just a little bit emotional. Johnny O'Neill was great for me during my career, and he asked me to do a job, and it's come off, and it was just important that Bossy expressed what I told him about the horse, that he could maintain a gallop, and that's how he rode him. He's a freak at this situation. Yeah, it's just great that it's paid off.
We had Winksy on Friday night with Gareth Hall and Gator and Dicko and myself, and we played him Bossy's quote. Oh, yeah, so, James, we said this and this. And he came back to me and said, okay, I need to clarify. I didn't actually say those things. This is what I said. And what he had told him was a far more measured, straight-batted feedback on what that horse had shown him. He didn't say it was a free. He didn't say it's flying. He said, I never expressed that. Mm. But what Glenn Boss does, and this is what I loved in understanding the relationship, he gets himself worked up and up into this headspace where he's going to win.
Mm.
And James said in the jockey's room, you could see him doing it in a group one. You could watch him preparing. He was strutting around. He'd be on a 20-1 shot, but he was walking around with his chest out, and this is just going to happen. He took my information and he heard what he needed to hear, and then he put it into a framework that gave him the confidence to ride a winning race. And as James said, that's what makes Glenn Boss such an elite big race rider. He gets himself into that unbeatable frame of mind and truly believes it before it's happened. Like sports psychology, you talk about like that Michael Jordan doco that's been on recently, Kobe Bryant, that Mamba mindset, all that sort of. The greats have it. They have that ability.
It seems to affect rivals too, where they sort of stand back a bit and it somehow makes it. What about the famous story before the third Melbourne Cup on Maccabi Diva, where we went out for a drink with Tony Santic at Crown the night before, and Bossy just said, mate, don't worry, it's predestined, it's going to happen. That's the worst early crow I've ever heard. He said, nah, don't worry about the Melbourne Cup,
and
mate.
Bossy had been getting bagged in recent weeks about his riding, saying that he's not riding that well, but when it comes to the big stage, the big day, Bossy very rarely makes mistakes.
No. It's like Frankie. They say you don't want to put him on a maiden at Yarmouth because he'll slaughter it, but if you put him on an Able in an Arc, he'll get the job done. So.
Absolutely.
Just on Sir Dragon A now, from a Melbourne Cup point of view, he's second favourite in the Cup. Is that his right quote? Has it been an overreaction? Kira Maher and Bossy thinks that he's going to be better suited over a further distance rather than 2,000.
I think he needs a wet track. That, it's not underplay, the wet track was a big help to Sir Dragon A. Look at his form. Some of his best runs have been on wet ground. Very best runs.
Russian Camelot, I thought he was tough and gutsy. What do you make of his run?
Absolutely, he was. Good ride, great effort from the horse, did everything right. He just met two better on the day. Armory was great. if Armory doesn't sort of hang at the top of the straight, does Sir Dragon A get the gap? Hard to say. You know, it's hypothetical, but he ran a super race too. Arcadia Queen was great on a wet track.
She almost fell.
Considering Mugatu was great, making a long looping wide run. We spoke about him on Friday. Maybe next year with a more deliberate preparation towards a Cox Plate, there's a horse you might want to follow in 12 months.
What's your thoughts, Russian Camelot, in the Melbourne Cup? He's confirmed he is going to the Cup.
I don't think he can win, but I think if you wanted to pluck out a positive, it was very similar to Fiorente's Cox Plate run.
Yeah, it was.
Very, very similar to Fiorente's Cox Plate run.
It was.
But whether he's as well-rounded and bounces off it to the Melbourne Cup, that's my worry with Russian Camelot, is whether he's a bit meek now, immature,
I think it's the right word. And I think it's been clear he's still a work in progress. I'm inclined to sort of risk him.
Tiger Moth seems to be the one that everyone's thinking is even a level above. So
Dean Lester's very keen on Tiger Moth, and I suppose if you take those international form lines, are you now starting to think, Sharky, that you've been very strongly in the camp of Surprise Baby? Very elegant. I mean, she would have been right in the finish if she'd run on a Cox Plate on Saturday.
She would have been the only one that would have got close to those two.
I still have Surprise Baby as my top pick, but Tiger Moth, and seeing a couple of his pieces of work, and you remind yourself of his form line, I'm glad that Santiago's not there, because I was really worried about Santiago and Tiger Moth. Now we're sort of half that threat to a degree with Santiago not being there, but Tiger Moth, he's going to be incredibly hard to beat.
Well, at the current rate, we'll probably lose another three before we get there from Werribee. So,
you want to talk about this. You're big on this because there has been... In fact, let's take a break and then we'll come back and we'll talk about it. There's a heap of SMSs to get through as well because you're concerned about what's going on down at Werribee with the internationals. You're listening to The Verdict. Keep the SMSs coming through 0416 90 50 52. We'll try and get through as many as we can. You're listening to The Verdict.
RSN 927's Racing Pulse presents The Verdict.
Welcome back to The Verdict, the Cox Plate edition. So much to talk about, a lot of SMSs coming through. This time of year, there's always the jockey merry-go-round. Text Danny O'Brien this morning said, any decision, re-vow and declare, and he's just replied that Michael Rodd has been engaged as the rider for the Melbourne Cup defending champion. However, I've got correspondence from an owner of Worcestershire saying that Michael Rodd's been booked to ride Worcestershire in the Melbourne Cup, so I'm sure that'll all get sorted out.
But this is
this time of year. Hughie Bowman had the ride on Sir Dragon A, he gets suspended, Bossy wins a Cox Plate, Hugh Bowman's off Sir Dragon A in a Melbourne Cup, Bossy has the ride, so there's plenty of swings and roundabouts. I tell you who would be sitting pretty at the moment and feeling very content with their booking in the Melbourne Cup, and that is Charlie Fellows. Jamie Carr put a clinic on Saturday. Four winners on Cox Plate Day. It's been a remarkable spring carnival so far on the major days, hasn't it? Willie Pike, four winners Guineas Day. Mark Zara, four winners Caulfield Cup Day. And Carr on Cox Plate Day.
And she was definitely in a winning headspace on Saturday, as she has been for the majority of the carnival. I think it was the last winner. She rode Miami Bound, and the post-race interview with Chris Simons, and he's come out, he starts introducing, he says, well, you drop your reins there, Jock, you'll get a fine for that. Like, she was just off a winner, fresh from it, but still quick as a whip, witty. She's a great ambassador for the sport, and we need to be using more of Jamie Carr, not only to highlight her skill, but she's a good talent, I think.
Well, we posed it's an impossible question yesterday, like what will be a bigger feat in history, Michelle Payne winning the Melbourne Cup, or if Jamie Carr can win the Melbourne Jockeys Premiership this year? Is the most greatest accomplishment? And it's a 50-50 argument, isn't it? Because Michelle Payne smashed history and did all those things, and she's an amazing champion. But Jamie Carr to win a Melbourne Jockeys Premiership, just never going to happen. It's never going to happen in history that a female jockey would win a Melbourne Jockeys Premiership against Oliver, Malum, Curry...
in one of the strongest jurisdictions of the world.
Yep. So I've kind of run out of things to say about Jamie Carr because I don't know what other superlatives we can use. It's just incredible.
Well, she's leading the premiership by six at the moment.
Michelle Payne, she rides one of her runners in race four on Saturday. Half an hour later, she's done up to the nines in the commentary booth for the rest of the day. Like, that's... I love that aspect of it as well. And racing can do that. Yeah. Because of the nature of the sport, you can't drag Jack Riewoldt off at halftime of a grand final and stick him in the commentary booth and say, by the way, how do you think the boys are going to go the rest of the game? But Michelle's just been, she's just been playing.
Yeah.
And here she is, like, with her opinion on the track, on the horses, on the mindset of the jockeys in the room that she has just been with. It's a unique quality of racing,
and it's been a great
adds to the broadcast.
It's been, without flying our own flag, it's been a great spring for getting inside the head of the jockeys and the ex-jockeys, and I think that's something that's been very refreshing this spring. Michelle is brilliant at it. James,
Hugh Bowman,
Dwayne Dunn,
as well.
All that. It's the best thing you can hear is from a jockey, I reckon.
100%.
Yeah.
And even when we were doing the sprint ticket on Saturday, the James Winks talking about Jamie Carr and also Dwayne Dunn about what her attitude, and James Winks said. He said, look, with no disrespect, she just doesn't care. He goes, she doesn't, it's not that she doesn't care about the ride or the horses, but she doesn't care about
get to her.
Yeah. Where the expectations are. If she's sitting three wide on a horse, she doesn't panic because she's a horsewoman and will just let the horse. Yep. It's all about how the horse feels to her.
Totally.
SMS is coming through here. Love Bossy's emotions standing up in the irons. He did get fined $1,000 for it. Love the post-race interview with Kieran Maher. That's one of the funniest things I've ever heard.
It's incredible.
And it was
that needs
brilliant.
To go viral.
That raw,
it has gone viral.
That raw emotion.
Thanks to my sisters. Oh, I haven't got it.
Another SMS here, Matty. Ree Werribee, is it time that we look to head back to Sandown or maybe acquire Macedon Lodge as an international quarantine?
What's wrong with Sandown? Sandown place. Was a great thing.
Well, I think it was a lot to do with the potential plan that they had for Sandown, that they couldn't have it forever because of, and that's still up in the air as well. So,
surely it's better.
29 horses came out. So 2 years ago, there was a major review off the back of the Cliffs of Moher and other things that had left a terrible stain on our racing industry and for us to defend against animal rights activists and all that. So a review into Werribee, which cleared it, and a review into the protocols of veterinary checking on departure and arrival and all those sorts of things. So that all happened. This year, 29 came out and 8 have gone by the wayside. One has been put down, involved. This is after he was sustained a catastrophic injury about a week ago. He was put down. We've lost Magic Wand to injury, Santiago, Wichita.
Well, Magic Wand had a hoof abscess.
Yeah. I'm just telling you the ones that have fallen by the wayside. There's degrees of what's happened. Involved, Collide. Nickajack Cave, CT scan requirement, Porky Arm fell by the wayside. So, no, you're right. It's not that they're all fatalities or anything like that. But
are we surprised? Like, these are horses that, for the entirety of their career leading up to this point, work daily in a straight line. Suddenly they arrive here and they're asked to work daily around a triangle. There is new pressure on different parts of the body. This was conveyed to me by a vet a few years ago out at Werribee and said, there is no surprise that there are injuries at Werribee because it's a totally different training environment to what these animals are used to. It'd be like going for a run around an athletics track and all of a sudden I'm saying, go on a cross-country track. You'll now go to train on a cross-country track up a hillside.
He needs a CT scan on his knees.
Something's going to happen.
But one thing I agree with all that, but there's two elements, a little not against that, but it was interesting talking to Jamie Steer this morning about that. One is, well, these straight-line training horses go to Breeders' Cups, Hong Kong, Japan, where they have the same sort of requirement to train around a circle. So,
but not for 2 weeks.
It's not unique that they... Well, that might be right too. It's not unique that they have to do that at Werribee. But they also have to race here around corners. They have to... If they can't handle it in training, they still have to do it in racing.
Well, the Japanese model is very straight line and uphill, or dog leg turns when they do turn, and they basically only see a turn on race day. It's not that load that's built into them day in, day out.
What happens now? Like, I asked Jamie, can they be mandatory CT scanned upon arrival? No. The CT scan only goes knees down and it isn't the be-all and end-all sort of thing. Very difficult to do. I'm still cloudy as to whether there is the availability of a CT scan before they come out, but what is trying to be established with Involved is what was his veterinary injury history before he came out, because after that review 2 years ago, there was supposed to be greater checking of them before they came out. We're not going to let them on the plane unless we're comfortable. Well, okay, well, let's work out exactly what the process was with a horse like this, and what was his veterinary history? Did he have a history? Was he a, not a ticking time bomb, but was he a horse that was a risk to enter here, and this happens, and then suddenly we have to try and fend off all these animal welfare discussions again, you know, so that have come via one source at Werribee.
It's a head-scratcher, because the record is not good in recent years, yet, you know, they've done all they can to make the track as safe as possible down there at Werribee, and it's still producing results. Yep. You know, Sir Dragonite come out of Werribee, wins a Cox Plate. Anthony Van Dyke, Armoury.
They're the best horses.
If Sandown's not going to be sold,
but it's
in
not,
the next
it's 10... not like a negative that you can't actually get horses to perform well out of there. But there is an underlying issue as to what's going on.
Those horses are elite, you know, or better than our horses. It's not Werribee that makes them better.
If Sandown's on ice for the next 10 years, I wonder whether they're going to have to start thinking about whether Sandown's a better option, because when we used to go up the back at Sandown there, it was like being at Newmarket.
There was
this massive uphill straight line and all this sort of stuff. And the bottom line is, I know there were less horses then, the injury rate at Sandown was significantly lower than the injury rate at Werribee.
Yep.
That's a fact.
We're going to have a chat to Neil Wilson from the VRC. Zero cases today.
Wow.
All of those tests that needed to be done, with what the Premier said, we had a pause yesterday, we didn't announce anything, have come back negative. So I would imagine that there will be an announcement today saying that we are opening up as what we had anticipated yesterday. Now, once that wasn't declared yesterday, the VRC had been running out of time. They had to pull the trigger and make a decision, and they've declared that there will be no crowds for this year's Melbourne Cup. I wonder whether 24 hours later that would have been a different conversation, and whether that 24-hour delay has cost the VRC and racing fans getting on course at Flemington. We'll put that to Neil Wilson when we get him on in a moment. SMS, he's saying, I want to give a rap to Chris Simons, his post-race horseback interviews. Absolutely. Well done, Chris Simons. Had a good spring. He's a ripping bloke too.
You can tell how the friendship he has with Jamie Carr. She was so good with him, wasn't she?
Yeah. And he's really grown into that role too over the last couple of years, doing that different carnivals around the place. And He's a good talent, Chris.
Just been announced, no penalty for Miami Bound heading towards the Melbourne Cup. So looks like Danny O'Brien's going to have four runners in the Cup this year as well. All right, we're going to take a break and then get Neil Wilson. So let's get this break out of the way and we'll come back with the VRC CEO, Neil Wilson.
The Verdict on RSN 927's Racing Pulse.
Welcome back to Racing Pulse. Plenty of SMSs are coming through. Hey guys, my uncle bred and owns Haydock. He's a small horse breeder from Gippsland and was ready to give up, and then Haydock came along. He'd be a great person to have a chat to. That's a good idea. We might do that after the spring carnival. Done, Adrian Hall. Well, in the next couple of days. Next couple of days. We can't get him on now because we've got to get the boss of the VRC on, because we are counting down to the huge Melbourne Cup week, and the decision had been a tough one that the VRC's been wrestling re-crowds, and it was made officially yesterday that there will be no crowds on course for the 4 days of the Melbourne Cup Carnival. Neil Wilson joins us. Good morning, Neil. How are you?
Good morning, Michael. Very well, thank you.
Hey, Neil, how tough was that decision, and was it almost made for you when the Premier didn't announce that the state was opening up yesterday?
Michael, we've been working with the government for some time around a submission that we've made to allow crowds back to Flemington for Cup Week. We held out as long as we could, and really what was left in terms of what we could deliver was such that we decided to give clarity to certainly our members who were disappointed for, and the public, and to start the week on Monday very clear that that's where we're heading, and now we're focused very much on what's shaping up to be one of the great weeks of racing this year, and also for our off-course engagement through the broadcast and a range of many exciting things we've got lined up.
Did it come down to hours, Neil, with the announcement today that there are zero cases and we may well see the state reopening later this week?
Oh, Mike, well, first of all, it's great news that it's zero cases, and I think that all bodes well for the journey we're on to come out of the restrictions. But ours was a much bigger picture around these things don't get decided by days or hours. They get But the planning that we've done is extensive, and you've got to have enough runway to make sure that you can put on a safe event, and you've got to have enough runway to make sure the experience is one that is worthy of attending Flemington during Cup Week. And hopefully the restrictions are reduced, and that'll give some opportunity for potentially owners to be revisited. But in terms of the public and the members, that clarity was really important, and we weren't confident, regardless of how much the restrictions would be released and when that was going to happen, we were going to really be in a situation where we couldn't guarantee the safety or the experience.
Neil, as you say, the off-course aspect now, promotion is the focus. Can you tease any innovations or any developments that we can see either directly from the club to members and racing fans or from the club through 10 that we can expect to see from Derby Day during Cup Week?
Mick, we're really excited about the broadcast. It's a dedicated broadcast for the 4 days of Cup Week. Won't be confused with the football that's going on, and it'll be very, very focused on the racing. And as I said earlier, we're so pleased with how the racing is shaping up. And I know you've been talking about that this morning, and there's no doubt that the Cup itself, the Lexus Melbourne Cup, you know, with how it's looking and the attraction to that race for all the right reasons. But this year's edition is shaping up to be one of the best in recent history. And throughout the week, every day has a fantastic range of races and headlined by the major feature race of each day. It's going to be a wonderful racing week, and we're going to be giving a lot more coverage to the racing participants, the stories of racing, both through our broadcast and also we've just launched a brand new website for Cup Week, cupweek.com.au. Make it your default website from now until the end of the carnival. It's going to be updated regularly. It's interactive. It has a whole range of different features, ranging from the marketplace, where you can actually buy goods and services from our sponsors. There's a whole area around the fashion side, the whole area around the entertainment that we're putting on each of the 4 days. That's already up there, talking about that. And, of course, we've got the play-to-win section, where we've got sweepstakes, we've got tipping competitions, we've got a whole range of different things that people can engage with on all 4 days. The Love Letter, the Cup Week competition, the Ross Stevenson Favourites, famous Love Letter series is there as well. And we've got a whole range of different ideas floating through there. And there'll be more to be announced later in the week. So I'm giving you a little bit of a taste of what's coming. And, of course, the racing dominates the website as well, with the news of what's happening and information around the key races and the fields and, as I said, the participants during the week. So we're pretty, we're really excited about the broadcast and the digital engagement. And of course, our extension of that throughout not only Australia, where some of the venues are more open and some of that activity will be spreading as Cup Day does into those different venues. And of course, across the world, where 750 million people can access the Lexus Melbourne Cup.
And Sharky, being the music connoisseur, will be pleased to know there are some big acts that are going to be played over the coming days as well. And the broadcast, as you said, lucky enough to be involved with Channel 10's coverage, along with David Gately, Peter Moody, James Winks is going to be involved from the racing side. Obviously, we've got Britt Taylor coming over from WA as well. It is going to be first class, and there's going to be a lot of crosses overseas into the state to the O'Briens, and Francesca Camani will be live over there as well from the international aspect. So there will be a big focus on the racing. And Neil, just a lot of owners who will be listening today, are we likely, do you think, to get some owners on course for a short period of time if they do have runners over the 4 days?
Well, we'd love that to happen, Michael. I think that's certainly the work that's going on, both from an industry and government point of view. We need to make sure that it's in line with the expectations of the community and within the COVID-19 restrictions as they will be applied from Derby Day onwards. So we're watching that carefully and, as I say, encouraged with this morning's announcement on the case numbers, and I'm sure there'll be some information in the next 24 hours that will guide us help the discussions that we are having with the industry and with the government. But it certainly would feel would be a great thing if we can make that happen, even if it's in a restricted way, but to give the owners during Cup Week the chance to be on course.
Good on you, Neil. We'll be in contact throughout the build-up to the 160th running of the Cup and Melbourne Cup Week, which is now just 5 days away. We can't wait for the countdown, Neil.
We can't wait either, Michael, and thanks very much for your support, and I look forward to talking to you soon.
Neil Wilson, the CEO of the VRC. I can't see if the state is now going to be opened up, retail, pubs and clubs later in the week, which is what we're hoping for there to be any reason, any kickback to having owners on course over the 4 days at Flemington.
Yeah, probably. It depends on the value of the experience, I guess, if you want to be the only owner there on an empty stage.
It's up to the individual.
If I had a cup runner, I'd want to be there.
I would definitely want to be there.
Anything in the group ones.
It's sort of becoming more promising beyond the spring now, isn't it?
I mean,
you know, like for country racing, picnic racing, all those sorts of things, that circuits that have been smashed because no one knew what was going on, and now maybe we're going to get a bit of action there. You know, like even if it's a sort of a shrunken version of what we, you know, and even some of these big country cups that are run through Christmas, New Year, I mean, they rely solely on Dunkel, all these sorts of things. You know, imagine you know, Hanging Rock on New Year's Day and things like that. It's a very promising sign for these clubs.
See, you can't win in racing at the moment. There's SMS is coming through. Appalling decision by VSC to stop members attending. It's not a government decision. Well, it is a government decision in the end, because they can't get permission to allow crowds to go. So that's what the situation is at the moment. There's no doubt every single race club wanted crowds and owners. There's another one here saying, oh, so the plebs can't go, only the owners. Well, if that's all they get permission, that's the way it is. No one wanted to see this happen. You saw the MRC push the envelope as far and as possible as they could last week with Martin Pakula, and you saw the public backlash that made them within 24 hours have to turn around. So that's because they're trying to push the envelope as far as they can.
Hey, I only watched a little bit of the rugby last night, but
you would love Gus Gould's commentary.
Yeah, but this us against them thing, it permeates everywhere. And look, I know I get into trouble for always having to go at their boss, but Peter Volandi's psychology through rugby and through racing is combat, isn't it? It's us against them. It's not the national game and the national audience and all this sort of stuff and the greater good. It's all about pitting Melbourne as the enemy. Did you, Michael, pick up on that?
Disgraceful coverage.
Do you think it's driven from above?
Well, I don't know whether Peter Volandis has started off with his tongue in his cheek just trying to stir the pot, but it's actually become more serious, because every time he talks, every time he opens his mouth, it is to denigrate Victoria, and it is that combativeness. And I like Peter Volandis as a person. I've got on well with him, but it has changed a lot, especially in
the
last
6 months. Is it helpful or is it damaging to racing?
No, it's totally negative. Yeah. But what I'm now starting to wonder is where this inferiority complex has come from, because that's all I can think of. Mm. We in Victoria don't really give two hoots.
Is it a game, though?
We talk about the Everest all the time. I'd like it on a different day than Caulfield Cup Day, but because we like it as a race, everything from Sydney and his mouthpieces, like Richard Callender, is negative towards Victorians. And I don't know why or where it's come from. And I can only think is it an inferiority complex?
He's accused me, basically, of working on behalf of Racing Victoria to attack Racing New South Wales at every opportunity. Like, things like that, they are just nonsense.
Well, look, we did see last year, and there had been edicts given to certain media outlets not to promote Caulfield Cup, not to promote Victorian racing, not to maybe speak about the Melbourne Cup as a race that stops the nation from New South Wales. I don't know why. Hopefully it's something that we can get over and work towards. But if that's the attitude, it is what it is. And as I said, I've got a lot of time for Peter Volandis. I think what he's done for New South Wales racing is very good, but he's now starting to wear a bit thin, the constant negativity re-Victoria. And I think it's something that we just
don't move on
and ignore. Exactly. Boys, we're out of time. This is going to be a huge week, counting down to a Melbourne Cup. Unfortunately, no crowds, but congratulations to Moonee Valley Racing Club for getting through the Cox Plate. Not the Cox Plate celebrations they wanted for the 100th running, but the build-up, the coverage on the day I thought was sensational. Yep. Everything that they did with their promotion, like the MRC, the crowd figures, as you would imagine, because no one can go anywhere, was outstanding on Saturday from the racing perspective. Let's hope it continues through Melbourne Cup Week. Have a good week, boys.
Yep, I'm going to follow up the Werribee stuff with Jamie Steer and a few other things and go for a wander. And
you find some internationals got to breed out here in Australia,
Sharky. Mares and foals to play with. Oh, yeah, I'm doing a little bit of that at the moment.
All right, we will take a break when we come back.